At any rate, this was the situation when Roosevelt was elected, and we went to Washington. Before I was appointed, I made a little conversation with Roosevelt, in which I said perhaps he wouldn't want me to be Secretary of Labor, because if I were, I should want to do this and this and this. Among the things I wanted to do was to find a way of getting unemployment insurance, old age insurance, and health insurance. And I remember he looked somewhat startled, and he said, well, do you think it can be done? And I said, I don't know. He said, well, constitutional problems, aren't there? Yes, very severe constitutional problems, I said. But what have we been elected for, except to solve the constitutional problems? Lots of other problems have been solved by the people of the United States, and there's no reason why this one shouldn't be solved. Well, he said, you think you can do it? I don't know, I said. But I said I wanted to try, and I want to know if I would have your authorization. I won't ask you to promise anything. He looked at me and nodded wisely. All right, he said, I will authorize you to try, and if you succeed, that's fine. Well, I said, that's all I wanted. I don't want you to put any blocks in my way, but we'll see what we can. There are plenty of people who want it, I said, who want it badly and will work for it. This is the way it all began. The legal committee at once broke into a row, of course, because the legal problems were so terrible. The constitutional problem was the great one. How could you get around this business of the state-federal relationships? Couldn't be done. We were having a great wrangle about it when one day I went out to tea, not because I wanted to, but in Washington you don't go to parties just because you want to go. You know, you go because you have to go. And I had to call upon Mrs. Stone, the wife of the Attorney General, and she was at home on Wednesday afternoons, and about 5:45, which is nearly the end of the day, I went to her house and presented myself. You know, there were a lot of other people there. Went out to the dining room to get a cup of tea, and there I met Mr. Justice Stone, who had just come home from the court and was getting his cup of tea. And we greeted each other and sat down to have a little chat. And he said, how are you getting on? And I said, all right. And then I said, well, you know, we're having a big trouble, Mr. Justice, because we don't know in this draft of the Economic Security Act that we're working on, we're not quite sure, you know, what will be a wise method of establishing this law. And it's a very difficult constitutional problem, you know, and we're guided by this, that, and the other case. And he looked around to see if anybody was listening, and he put his hand up like, and he said, the taxing power, my dear, the taxing. You can do anything. I didn't question him any further. Because it wasn't proper. I knew it wasn't proper for him to tell me, and I shouldn't say it. But I went back to my committee, and I never told them. Well, I got my great information. As far as they knew, I went out into the wilderness and had a vision. And so I did. Anyway, I came back and said I was firmly for the taxing power. We weren't going to rig up any of these curious constitutional relationships. The taxing power of the United States, you can do anything under it, said I. And so it proved, did it not? of course, some of you don't remember the anxiety with which some of us watched the first case go before the Supreme Court, but it came down absolutely all right, the opinion written in elaborate, fine social language by Mr. Justice Brandeis. Not by Mr. Justice Stone, but he voted aye on the matter, and we were safe. And this is the reason, of course, that we build so strongly on the taxing power, and that the whole system of taxation is the basis of the Social Security Act. We tax the aged when they're young, and we tax all the other young people for the Social Security system while they are at work, and then when they retire, they are eligible.